It's January 7th, 2013. Welcome to the John Weiler Podcast. Welcome to the John Weiler Podcast. And I want to thank John Seppinen again for providing that intro music and all the music for the John Weiler Podcast. He's a good friend of mine, a very talented individual. So expect to hear more from him. Well, it is first week of January, and we have gone through our Christmas and our New Year holiday, and everybody, for the most part, has survived, which is always a good thing. I can say that I'm happy whenever Christmas is over without sounding too much like a Scrooge, but I think our focus has really been skewed here over this last years and what is involved with Christmas and these holiday seasons and whatnot, and it's more than what it really should be, so I'm glad it's done. So back into the swing of things. Right now, I'm preparing for the upcoming Survival Trial 3. That's going to take place here on February 23rd at the NRA Whittington Center. And we have everything laid out for you competitors and for anybody else who's thinking about competing. It will not be easy. It will not be easy. But that's why you're doing it, I would hope. I would hope that's why you're doing it. The survival trial is so much more than just a shooting competition. We have a new promo out on that, and I'll have a link to that here at the in the notes of this podcast. And we've put out several here in the last month and a half with this video footage that we picked up during the ST2, and we're really trying to tell the story of the survival trial, and that's one of the most difficult things. Because the survival trial is, it's so much rolled into one event. It's a preparedness training event. We offer classes leading up to the survival trial, one-day courses that are very abbreviated defensive pistol, defensive carbine courses. We have it set up for about 8 hours that week leading up to the survival trial. But we really take a very strong fundamental approach in those train-ups. So you do well, number one, in the trial. You're safe, too. I mean, that's really an important factor for us, is that we know who you are, you know, from these train-ups and you know how well you interact with your equipment. Not to take anything away from anybody who doesn't do this, but you know that's really one of our intents with that. But we also offer classes on range estimation, land navigation, orienteering, how to plot your points, and things like that. And we're going to expand on that particular part of that here in 2013, and first aid too. So it's a lot of different things here. It's not just coming to walk around in the mountains and shoot targets in the day and at night. It can be part of a lifestyle change. And that's really what I'm going for as a creator of the survival trial. I think that one thing that we're lacking as a focus, I don't think that we're lacking potentially in the reality of this, but as a focus, is self-reliancy. Being able to take care of yourself and preparedness. I think that we see a lot of the things on TV that say we're a dependent society and we have to have somebody take care of us. You know, we have that expectation of it, but I would really start to disagree with that sentiment that we are told, just from the people that I interact with and the people that interact with me. And I don't mean always in a like a business sense, you know, because my business is training. My business is a service, educational service. So I have people that are coming looking to expand their prepared mindset or skill building and things like that in that aspect, you know, with that intent in mind. But I also interact with, you know, everybody else. You know, it's not just the individuals that come to these classes or come to the survival trial. There's a big push in our nation to move away from this dependency. I see a lot of articles on the news where we have a entitlement mentality. I just read one this morning on the Drudge Report on how college-aged kids have a higher sense of entitlement. I don't know. I mean, maybe. Maybe. I actually attended college a year ago, the fall semester a year ago. That was my last semester that I was in school. And I am an English major because I really enjoy to write. I like to read. I think that words, well, we all know that words are extremely powerful in the use of words, the meanings of words. And we're seeing that more and more in our society today with the interpretation of, like, the Second Amendment, for example, the laws that are being introduced. Because once those words written on paper are signed into a law, then we are all bound by that. Those words, any words, have extreme power. So that's what I focus on, you know, with my major. But with that, I'm around, you know, a large demographic of people, not just college-aged kids, but the professors, the teachers. There are people that are, you know, my age, I'm in my middle 30s now, that are doing the same thing that I am, going back to school, and or, you know, either to expand on their existing credentials or to start a whole different path, you know, a working path. And also veterans too, a lot of veterans. But I didn't really gather this sense of entitlement that, you know, we hear on the news and things like that. I don't buy it. I don't buy what we're being told as far as the sentiment of our society. But it's important. It's important to really think about this and address this too, because these words that are being put out on this scale within our media, within our reporting, is being read by everybody. Anybody that's got a connection to the internet right now can get up and read that article that's on the Drudge Report on how our youth have this sense of entitlement. And then they can link to these videos that show people all happy because they just got a new cell phone from the president, from President Obama. You know, and how people are saying if you take care of him, he'll take care of you. Which we've all seen now in these last couple weeks that's not the case. Not the case. Raising taxes and whatnot. Talking about shutting down our Second Amendment with or without Congress. Passing bills that can potentially indefinitely detain American citizens with the NDAA. These are things that I'll talk about at length later, not on this podcast, but I guess the point that I'm making here is the survival trial is about a lifestyle change, about giving the opportunity for people to understand that you can do these extremely difficult things on your own. Even if you already know that, you know, and even if you really even practice this in your life, we take it to the extremes. We want to push you until you want to quit, until you literally have nothing left, that you are so shocked with yourself and the standards that you have set for yourself, and you're thinking, I'm so much better than this, why am I not doing better? And I can speak from that standpoint, because that's how I am. I have extremely high expectations for myself and everything that I do. And most of the time, I do not perform to those expectations in everything. Everything. And it's disappointing for me when that happens. But it's also very good because it teaches me. And I learn. At no time in our lives should we ever stop striving to learn something new, especially about ourselves? And that's the goal with the survival trial. So when we have this information up, these videos, we have a lot of interviews with the competitors after the event. I mean, a lot of finish line interviews where we hear such inspiring words come out of the competitors' mouths. And it's amazing to me. Because we are all, every one of us, we are all ordinary people. All of us. There is nothing that individually, just as it is, as we're all standing in a line, that makes us extraordinary. Except our will. Our will. Our will to move on. Our will to not give up. Our will of reflection on where we are and what we're doing. And those interviews that are up on the Survival Trial television site and the YouTube page are a direct reflection of that. Because I know that the competitors of the ST2 were not thinking about what they were going to say when they crossed the finish line. I know that for a fact. It just naturally came out of their mouths because of what they reflected on within themselves during the trial. And that's amazing. It's amazing to me. This human condition that we have, that we're all connected to. We all are alike in one form or the other. So, going back to the survival trial and the ST3 that we have coming up here, we want to see a few more teams out there. We have it about 60 to 70% full. And granted, this is February and it's winter and it's going to be hard. It's going to be cold. You have the potential for snow and or freezing rain. It's going to be muddy. You're going to go up and down and you're going to go all around. And you're going to be doing a lot of things that I can promise you right now you will not be expecting. You will not be expecting. But they will be relevant to our lives, especially as it stands right now. Especially. We want this to be a training event, something that everybody can turn around and take something away from, and then potentially add that to their daily lives. That's extremely important to me. Because I learn out of every class that I run, every class that I'm in, really every interaction I get with people, and we all do this. You know, there are words that come out of people's mouths that are just so nonchalant that would just resonate in our brains. You know, and that's really the reality of it. We don't realize the magnitude that we have in other people, just in these slight passings that we have, you know. And that's where we need to be resilient. On who we are, what we stand for, what we believe in, and what we're going to support. The survival trial is part of that. Because it's part of this difficulty, these hardships that define us. And in this case, we willingly put ourselves through that to see if we have what it takes to designate this new normal. That was a term used by Team Valhalla Armory in one of their finish line interviews. Resetting what's normal, or really resetting what's achievable. And I thought that was very insightful, because that is the truth. We've experienced this pain before. So I understand it, because I know what it feels like. So, stay tuned for that. We're also working on a little more interaction with everyone through the survival trial. we'll be starting to do some survival trial chats. And we may not call it that. I may not call it that. I don't know if that sounds dumb, but basically I'm going to release some videos here that talk about the survival trial and try to put things into perspective, because it's just such a different event. There's nothing out there that's like it, and there never will be. So stay tuned for that. Okay, next, let's talk a little bit about this upcoming assault weapon legislation. Now, I use that term assault with quotations, all right? As you do too, I'm sure. I mean, it's such a ludicrous term that is tied to an inanimate object. But it is what it is. And we see this coming down. It's supposed to be this Feinstein legislation. The last report I read, it was supposed to be introduced on the 22nd of January. So we're talking right now, we have a named date for this to happen, this impending doom that we're all waiting on within the firearms industry, but also in a way that directly affects all American citizens. Because this is a bold step. This is a very bold step taken by our government to limit the rights of the citizen. And there's a lot of talk about that, too. I mean, I say that really without fear of being too extreme. I have a problem with not so much filtering, but beating around the bush. To me, it's a waste of time. And for those of you who know me, I mean, I hope that comes out, because, man, this is a bold move. It's shocking. It's disappointing, and I've already talked about this in my last podcast, so we're not going to stress that too much. But what I would like to talk about here is a lack of response so far by the firearms industry as a whole. I mean, we have a lobbying agent within the National Rifle Association, and their response is, in my opinion, just as disappointing. Again, I'm not going to beat around the bush on this. I've seen, calls for action from private companies. Guns America is one of them. You want to know the truth of it, is the only one that I've seen that have called, you know, to start getting the people involved, to start getting the information out, this word out, that our industry, our livelihoods, are under direct threat right now. If not for the basic human rights, these defensive rights that we all possess for existing, just existing in life right now, we have the basic right to defend ourselves. If somebody or something takes an aggressive posture against us, we have that right of defense. So not even looking at it from that perspective, but from a financial perspective, we have a wait-and-see mentality. Well, let's just wait and see. This has happened before. It has not happened before like this. This is a whole different animal. This is something that's foreign. Very foreign to American citizens. What is happening within our nation? It's not foreign in the history of the world. It's hard to refute that. You go back and open up your history books, this type of fervor has happened before with not very good results. Again, not beating around the bush on this. So where's the response been? Where's the response? That a lot of companies make a lot of money. good for them. You know, not bashing that at all. That's a good thing. I wish everybody luck as far as that goes. Wish them the best, but what about the future? What about the near future? Because let's look at it from this perspective here. Let's just say that it's something what we would consider looking at this huge snowball that's starting to roll down the hill right now with this assault weapons legislation. Let's just say, for example, that they ban the high-capacity magazines like they did in the 94 assault weapons ban. Let's just say that that's our best-case scenario here. When is it going to end? When's it going to stop? When is this push to take away from the American citizen, to disarm the citizen, when is that going to end? It's not. It will not. The way that things are now, it will not end. And that's just the reality of our state of affairs. We will always be on the defense. And then you have to ask yourself, why is that? Why is that? When our country was founded, and hate is not the right word. I'll take that back. I don't always want to keep referencing our founding of our nation, because that is everywhere, as it should be. Because our nation was founded on these specific principles for a specific reason. War. War. War fighting for your independence in a defense of our liberty. That's how we came about. These very specific reasons to have these rights in place have had a coordinated attack against it for how long? Decades? Maybe longer, I don't know. And then you ask yourself, why is that? If the nation that fought for their freedom and established this new style of government for the people, by the people, why has there been a concerted effort to undermine that in recent years, especially in the last 10, ever since 9/11? You know, talk about 9/11 being like the center, the drop in a ripple in the water. The apex, the very center of where we are now and why we are here. Nothing is the same as it was, what year is this here? 12 years ago. Nothing. And that's a terrible event. I mean, we all talk more about that. I mean, for most of us listening to this, we experienced it. Maybe we watched it on TV. Maybe we were there. I joined back up to the military after watching that. Went to war because of it. I served several people that were actually there on the ground. Some that had very lucrative professions, but chose to enlist for 3 or 4 years to go and fight to do their part. Very admirable. And I think encompassing of what an American is. Going back to this entitlement mentality that we hear in the news and how we're all so bad. But just look what happened over this last 10 years. from that one event that started this snowball to where we're standing right now, looking at our fundamental right of defense being stripped away from us, again out of fear, and also around shadowy circumstances, murky circumstances. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens here in the next coming weeks. I wish I would see more from the firearms industry in defense of this. I wish I'd see something more comprehensive from the National Rifle Association. And I'm not bashing anybody either. I mean, this isn't the easiest times to navigate through. I understand that. I think we all do. But I think it's time to read the writing on the wall. What's really going on here? What are we really talking about? What are we really being told? All right. So, those are thoughts to think about. Which I know you already are. if you're not, you know, I don't think you'd be listening to this. All right, so let's move on here. I am a veteran. I'm a combat veteran. I did serve in the invasion of Iraq in 2003 with the 82nd Airborne Division. I have post-traumatic stress, and I don't have a problem telling anybody about that, because it's true. It's a reality, and it's a big part of my life. I cannot run away from it. I can't hide it. There's no lying about it, because I can't get away from it. Just like the vast majority of all combat veterans, whether or not we want to accept that fact or not. Because we lie, the most effective lies, it seems, are the lies we tell to ourselves. Even though you hear that saying, you can't lie to yourself, yes you can. Yes you can. But most of the time, you don't realize that you're experiencing these symptoms of post-traumatic stress until you're looking back on them. You know, I can tell you that from first-hand experiences. So, what I want to really kind of talk about here is I saw a news report maybe 3 or 4 days ago on how the suicide rate among veterans outnumber the combat deaths now in 2012. The suicide rate among veterans outnumber the combat deaths in 2012. And we're not going to discuss right now why we're still at war after over a decade. Why, I just read another report yesterday on how the sergeant major was sending his son off to war. They're both enlisted. The sergeant major, with several deployments under his belt, was watching his son go over to Afghanistan for the first time. Why we have generations at combat zones, because we've been at war for so long. We won't talk about how there's no end in sight with these wars, how we keep actually expanding on these wars. So we won't talk about that. Let's talk about the fallout of it and how our youth are killing themselves, dying at a faster rate when they come home from war than when they do in actual combat. That is extremely disturbing to me. But what is more disturbing about this is that there's not a larger outcry because of this. Why in the hell are we not acting on this information? We are proud to send our sons and daughters to war. We have a sense of pride with that, because they are fighting for their country. In our minds, they are fighting for our country, keeping us safe. They are doing their part They are sacrificing. But then when they come home, they're abandoned. You are used and then thrown away. And how can I say that? That's not the truth, right? Well, then why is the suicide rate topping our combat deaths? Why do we have so many of our young men and women killing themselves? Over wars we barely talk about anymore. That's just become part of life. I don't get it. I don't get it. It is extremely disheartening. And this isn't a lecture by any means. This is something to think about. Who's sending our sons and daughters to war? For what reason? Why are they still doing it? And why are they not taking care of them? Consider this. Look at your children now. I have young kids. They will not be joining the military. They will not take part in this. Think about that. I heard a report, or I read a report a few months ago where there was a paratrooper that was killed. And he was 19 or 20, something like that. And it was a good article. I mean, it was well written, and it really showed the exemplary actions that this young man took, you know, with the circumstances involved his death. And I did not know him. But what struck me the most was his age. How young he was. And his age when September 11th, 2001 happened. He was just a little boy. And then I wonder about his parents. You know, his mom and dad maybe sitting on that couch with their little boy playing. You know, I like my kids, they run around the living room and stuff. I watch the news. Watching those planes hit those towers and not knowing that 10 or 11 years from now, their son would be dead in that war. Caused by those actions. That's kind of a sobering thought when you look at things like that. And maybe a response is, well, that's why we got to keep fighting. But my question is, what are we fighting for now? We supposedly killed Osama bin Laden. We're bombing other countries. We're helping these quote-unquote rebels overthrow these other regimes in the Middle East, which I think is crazy that we support that. What if somebody's trying to, what if another country is trying to do that to the United States? How would we view that? Who's making these decisions here that these other people need to go, these dictators and stuff? And then I'll also ask you to consider where the information sources are coming from on who is terrible and who is doing what. And who, I mean, maybe some of it's true too, you know, but is it really our place, I guess is what I'm getting at. Should it not be the people who are oppressed that should be taking care of this, as opposed to being co-opted by another nation that may have some interests in seeing that quote-unquote regime fall? What are we really supporting? What are you supporting right now by not taking action? What are you passively supporting? All right, so moving on. I have these certain talking points that I kind of want to get over here, you know, go over. I'm trying to set a structure for this John Wyler podcast. And I want to speak to you as truthfully as I can and from the heart. Because these issues, I've experienced a lot of these issues firsthand. I mean, we all are, I mean, in different capacities, experiencing these things firsthand. I've just seen them in other countries before. I've seen how they affect a wide variety of people. So I want to speak to you as truthfully and from the heart as I can. Not from a firearm instructor standpoint only, or a veteran standpoint, or a father, family man, but all those positions, because we're all a number of things. A number of things make every one of us who we are. Life is not black or white. Choices within them are not easy. And these circumstances that are around us right now make our lives extremely difficult. Bring us a lot of stress, a lot of fear. Fear that unknown. What is going to happen? What are we going to do? What should we do? Awareness. Let's talk about awareness. I touched upon this a little bit, talking about this assault weapons legislation. But let's talk about the NDAA and this indefinite detention clause within it. Along with this assault weapons legislation, this is just as, if not more, deplorable. It's shocking that the land of the free would introduce indefinite detention to its own citizens. How does that make us any different? Regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the verbiage within the clause itself, because those wordings are misleading. The words within that clause are misleading. Because the United States of America is now designated as a war zone or a battleground or whatever word you want to use with that. So that means that this specific thing would allow us to fall under a military court. Excuse me, not a, civilian or non-military court. Our judicial system that we are all guaranteed under the Fifth Amendment. So that's misleading. It's actually a lie. Misleading is a nice way to saying it's a lie. It's a lie. So landmark things, these little footholds that we're getting with this, the wording is very misleading, because we can still be indefinitely detained for whoever designates what the definition of a terrorist is and who the terrorist is, and what capacity of help, quote-unquote help, that this individual is suspected of giving to this, quote-unquote, terrorist or terrorist group. That's what the NDAA is. Indefinite detention. Indefinite detention on suspicion in the United States of America. I just can't believe it. I cannot believe it. I cannot vocalize my outrage enough about this, on how the people that introduced this, any portion of this legislation, is still going to work as a representative who has not been fired for even considering it, and thrown in jail. I mean, just think about the implications here. Just from a social standpoint of the fear that that causes people. You know, the control that it would give to the governing body. Just from fear alone. it's going to definitely influence how you interact on a lot of different levels, the things that you say and how it can be perceived. Our First Amendment rights. We have the freedom to say whatever we want at any time. There's consequences for everything. I talk about this a lot, you know. I mean, you have the consequence to, let's say, confronting somebody or calling somebody a nasty name. The consequences are you might get punched in the face. You know, you have to defend yourself. But you still have the right to do that. You're not going to get thrown in jail for that, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on what you say now, but you have that right. And what this does is this not just, I mean, the fact that we can be indefinitely detained on suspicion is a big deal. But just the social ramifications that it causes, you know, just on its own, this fear environment that it's going to give, it's no different than East Germany, Soviet Russia, any of the other communist Asian countries. And yet, here we are, United States of America, having our legislative body introduce and then pass these bills, and our executive branch saying, well, you know, we're going to pass this, but I promise not to enforce it. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that sounds okay. Yeah, we trust you. And I trust whoever's going to be elected after you, and then whoever's going to be elected after you not to do it. You know, we just have the power to do it. We have the ability, but we're not really going to. That's crazy. Did you buy a car from somebody who has that type of power? You know, say, well, I have the ability to remotely shut off your car, you know, when you buy this from me, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to keep it here in the dealership, you know, so don't worry about it. Got a good deal on it. This is a good deal. So ask yourself this. How is your awareness right now? What are you thinking about in your environment? What do you know? Where are you getting your information? I'm going to talk about this the next podcast, but as I was looking these things up, you know, because I see these things, everybody's on Facebook. Facebook's really an interesting way to spread information, as we all know. I mean, we have revolutions that are started from Twitter, like Facebook posts and whatnot, you know. But these other things that float around, you know, and it makes me say, well, that doesn't sound right. Then I go look it up myself. I do some research on it and say, wow, that is not right. You know, that's usually what I find out is that is true. That's not crazy. That's not somebody spouting off at the mouth. That really is happening. Another thing I came by was that there's some kind of propaganda law or something that allows the government to influence the media to push their agendas. Now, I'm going to look this up here when I'm done, and if I find it, I'm going to put that link down into the notes of this podcast. But and if I'm wrong, I apologize too. You know, that might not be correct, but I have to find the physical thing. But what I'm getting at here is, where do you get your information from? If you're getting it strictly from, you know, the three main channels, the three main networks, NBC, CBS, or ABC, or even the 24-hour news networks, I would say especially those networks, are you getting the whole truth? Are you getting any portion of the truth? You know, I think that might be a more fair question. Are you getting even a portion of that truth? So these are things to consider, you know. What is going on? Where is your level of awareness with the things that are beginning now to directly affect you? Okay, so I want to thank everybody again for tuning in to the John Wyler podcast. I don't want it to sound like I'm ranting and raving about, you know, what's going on with our nation's capital and these politics, quote unquote politics, because I don't even think we're talking politics here. I just don't have that belief that we're talking about politics. We're talking about our basic human rights here. How it is in that preamble for the Declaration of Independence. We have these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How many of you are happy? How many of you are happy with our current situation and our society? Maybe not even as our nation, as far as the boundaries go, you know? But in our society, our whole social fabric, how many of you are happy with that? So I'll leave that with you to think about. And thank you again for tuning in to the John Wyler Podcast. Your comments are welcome below. Either post them here on the site or on our Facebook page. You know, it'll be on the PMI, and I'll probably link it to the Survival Trial Facebook page. But I'd really like to know what you guys think about this. And give me your thoughts. What else would you like to talk about here? Because that's also very important. Okay, so that's it for this week. I wish everybody good luck with this week and enjoy it and try to get the most out of every day. Because every day is a gift. All right, we will see you back here next week on the John Wyler Podcast.